This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On the show this week, Jane Barron, the organizer of Red Hills Horse Trials, tells us what we can expect at this year's event. But first, we hear from Joe Whitehouse on news from the USEA office. Joe, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Chris. Good to be here.
Well, I know that you spent some time in the Florida sunshine down at the new Wellington Invitational this weekend. And so we wanted to talk about the topic of recognized versus unrecognized events. So give us your thoughts on how that went and your thoughts on the difference between those two topics.
Okay, well, obviously a recognized event means that it's registered with the USEA and with the United States Equestrian Federation, and it meets all the criteria required of a recognized competition. The showcase event in Florida this weekend didn't meet the criteria for a cross-country course, so it couldn't be registered as an advanced horse trials. So it was more like a test. You probably are aware that the USEA has eventing tests, which can be run in conjunction with a recognized competition, or they can be run as standalones. If they're recognized with us, obviously we help promote them and we get the word out. But because the length of the course was short of the distance required for a horse trials, that's what made it impossible to register as a recognized event. So it was recognized, and I use the word recognized, but it was run as more of an approved test than as a competition that would recognize with the USEF. And the USEF had no objection to them running it. That was how it was worded. And the USEA had no objection to them running it. It was a huge promotional opportunity for the sport, and that's why I think we were all supportive of it.
Well, I understand it was a great success and the riders enjoyed it and everything was done very professionally, of course. But let's just clarify that difference between being sanctioned, so to speak, Joe, and not sanctioned. We say recognized, but we mean sanctioned, and it means that there are benefits, obviously, through the USEA of being sanctioned with them. Do you want to just outline those benefits?
Yes. The sanctioned with the USEA means that it meets the standards, and as an approved event, it has gone through the calendar process so that it has been approved by each area to be on their calendar. You get the, obviously, the quality of the officials. You get the course design. You get everything is approved and has to meet a certain standard to get that approval, and safety checks are in place. So it's the highest quality of competition because of the fact that it is run under the rules and regulations of the federation. It has the qualified and approved officials, and they have qualify and approve the courses and the overall event. So that gives you a high level of security that when you enter this event, you know what you're getting, and you know that all safety precautions are in place and the standards are exactly as they are stated.
And, of course, there are the benefits to horses and riders for the points system, too, and being recognized and listed under your membership on the website.
Yes, if the rider is a member and the horse is registered with the USEA, it will then be eligible for qualifications, for championships, for leaderboard high score points, and so there's all those benefits that come with it, and you've seen the many lucky ones that manage to accrue enough points that when they get to the annual meeting, they are head of that leaderboard, and it means a lot for them. So, there are a lot of benefits to the members for registering, becoming a member, and joining and entering recognized events.
So looking at the event that you supported, unofficially, I should say, in Wellington this weekend, and what a showcase it was for the sport, and it gave some opportunities for cross-promotion with the other Olympic disciplines in Wellington, what was your takeaway from that, Joe? What do you think the sport has learned from that?
I think the sport has learned that there is a place for another arm of the sport, another product, as you, if you will, that we, and I think the obviously Mark Bellissimo, Jim Wolfe, Michael Stone were all the people involved in organizing it. And I think Mark said something that, you know, if they can get the attention and the sponsors and the promote that across the disciplines, as you say, it will raise everybody. It will raise the sport at all levels. And I have to say that having spoken to him, Mark Bellissimo is as interested in helping and supporting the beginner novice rider as he is the Olympic athletes. So I think that it's a case of this type of sport, this type of program. I was amazed, Chris, quite frankly. We have 45,000 some followers on Facebook. We have millions of views of our website from unique viewers. You've got Eventing Nation going out to how many people? I don't know, but obviously a lot. And it was quite surprising to me when I saw some of the other discipline members coming in that had obviously heard of Eventing, but they really had no idea what was going on. And that was a huge surprise to me because I tend to know what's going on in show jumping because, you know, I love watching it. And I think the biggest problem is that we all get in our own little silos and we focus on what we do and we're not as aware of what's going on in the other disciplines as you would think. And that was a big surprise to me that there was some very experienced hunter-jumper people that came over and were quite surprised at what was happening. Very impressed, by the way. Those riders and those horses put on a terrific show, and there's no denying that.
Well, it speaks to the advantages of cross-promotion, of course, which was the thinking behind the establishment of the World Equestrian Games back in 1990, that it would give mm-hmm. other disciplines the opportunity to learn more about yours and vice versa. So maybe there's an opportunity for more of those type of showcases then, as you say, because everyone benefits.
Yes, I think that's true. And I think, you know, obviously some of the lower-level riders, you know, they might be questioning the focus being on the upper-level riders, but I have to say that the people riding at the beginner, novice, novice, and training levels, they should be darn proud of themselves because they are keeping that long format alive. You know, they're keeping the tradition of the sport alive, and that has to be applauded. And we're with them, and we're helping to do that and keep that alive because it's such an educational opportunity. But in the same token, the upper level riders are doing their level best to promote the sport and to keep it in the view of many, many people and bringing in sponsors who apparently are on waiting lists now to sponsor this thing next year. So that can only be good for the sport, Chris. Getting the word out, cross promotion, and making sure that everybody at every level gets the benefit of what's happening right now in the sport.
Absolutely, and we need those leading riders. It's like any sport. You have to have the role models to inspire the youth coming into the sport and give them some incentive and motivation to excel at whatever level mm-hmm. they achieve.
Yes, and you know, I think trying to be the very best beginner novice rider you can possibly be and how training your horse to that level to be the very best beginner novice horse it can be, that's a huge goal, and I applaud people for doing that. And that is the case at every level. And when you get to what we saw this weekend, David O'Connor said something, and I sound like I'm name-dropping, but my goodness, you know, these guys have got years in the sport. And he said that was entertainment, and the riders were entertainers. And that's what they did. They entertained that crowd. And I think it can only be good to see that they were so willing to be interviewed, so willing. They were so excited about it themselves. It was really, it was infectious, you know, that excitement and enthusiasm, and you could just see them having such a good time. That's what the sport's about, having a good time safely and having fun with it.
Absolutely, and we should congratulate Boyd Martin, who rode Trading Aces to win that competition ahead of Lainey Ashker and Michael Pollard, obviously a star-studded field, and they all had a lot of fun, as you said. Only good for the sport. We look forward to next year's event. And for those that are new to this podcast, Joe, and maybe new to the sport, we should remind them there is quite an alphabet of acronyms that we use constantly on the show. USEA, obviously, United States Eventing Association, the FEI, the International Equestrian Federation, the USEF, the United States Equestrian Federation. And we could go on. There are so many. It really is an alphabet of anachronisms, isn't it?
It is. And I think there's a role for each one to play. The USEA, Eventing Association, is the eventing affiliate of the U.S. Equestrian Federation. The U.S. Equestrian Federation has 28, at last count that I had, breeds and disciplines. They are all equestrian sport, and you have the United States Dressage Federation, which is the dressage affiliate, and the USHJA, which is the hunter-jumper affiliate, so and so on down the line. So each one of us, the affiliates, is focusing completely on their sport, but comes within the umbrella of the federation. And then, of course, the all nations have federations that are members of the International Equestrian Federation, which is the FEI. That go, if you see any of the C-suites, the CIC, the CCI, those are international competitions run and sanctioned, again, for they have to meet all the levels and they of safety and specifications, and that's the international governing body that manages all that.
And they, of course, are the body that speak to the International Olympic Committee, the IOC, which is an all-important chain, isn't it? The USEA to USEF, FEI, and then ultimately the IOC.
Yes, yes. And that's and it's amazing how well it all works. Yes, we have sometimes, this rule, I'm not sure we like that rule, but there is a lot that the FEI asks every federation to weigh in on the rule changes. And so it's a global thing, Chris, and from top to bottom. It's amazing. It really is. It's very exciting.
It is. Well, speaking of rules, we want to just touch on some developments that took place at the convention last year in terms of the realignment that the members approved with regard to Area 2 and Area 8.
Well, it was all of the areas. Basically, it was a change in the bylaws. We had a very complex statement in the bylaws that was based on a map in 2002, and the idea was to update everything. And it was evident that the realigning the areas by state lines made it a lot easier for people to know where they were. There were some administrative things that needed to be cleaned up, and so that's why that was changed. I think when we approved it, it was on the bylaws. And when it was approved in December at the annual meeting, there were one or two people, I think it was from Area 9, who some of the eastern Montana went into Area 7 from Area 9, and, there was a little concern there. But those members in eastern Montana really wanted to be with Area 7 with the rest of Montana. So it really didn't cause any issues in December. And I think it was just the fact that, and it may be that a lot of new members don't understand, seem to come across as if they thought they could only compete within their area. Well, as you and I know, Chris, people compete across areas all over the place. People compete wherever they want to compete. So it really doesn't stop anyone competing. They were concerned about, I think, area awards and things like that. And so we had, in January, we had a conference call with the area councils, and everybody agreed that they could make adjustments for the area awards and for the championships. So it really became a non-issue. And those people now in Area 8 for this year, the Western Pennsylvania people that were in Area 8 and are now listed in Area 2, have been given the opportunity to choose which area they would like to call home. And so they, for this year, they can decide by March 1st that if they want to compete for Area 8, that is just fine. The two events that were impacted are now on the Area 2 calendar and on the Area 8 calendar on the omnibus. So, you know, make sure that you know that Lost Hounds and Erie are available to you no matter which side of that line you live. And I think the other part of it was the adult riders, the young riders, they can select for this year which area they want to represent. The board then will revisit this in their next two meetings. One, we have a conference call in May, and then we have the face-to-face meeting in August, and they will revisit it and take into consideration everybody's concerns. I think the one thing that came out of it, Chris, is how passionate people are about home, which is their home area, and that means that they're passionate about the sport, and that's what we all love, the fact that these people were so passionate, and they got on their emails, and they sent us lots of information that will really help going forward.
Terrific. Well, thank you very much for that update, Joe, coming on the show. And we'll catch up with you down the road, where there's always news coming out of the office. So we'll keep abreast of it right here on the podcast. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, Jane Barron joins me now from Red Hills in Tallahassee, getting ready for their event this spring. Jane, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Well, as I said, just a few weeks to go, that first weekend in March, that all focus will be on Red Hills Horse Trials. Tell us what's in store for us this year. Any new developments that you want to share with us?
Well, we have seriously been on the move again. We realized after the monsoon on Thursday of the 2014 event that we were past due in considering a move of the sponsor tent and show jumping out of the lowest spot on the piece of property. So we have engaged in an engineering study to sort of redesign our site and are still working diligently on pulling all the pieces together, but we're going to make it. The sponsor tent will now be on high ground. The show jumping arena obviously is moving to the north field with the show jumping. We have truckloads of granite screenings that have come in for permanent footing for both the show jumping arenas and for the dressage arenas. And this year, two of the dressage arenas will be encompassed within the show jumping arena. So they'll be positioned right in front of the sponsor tent, which will be great for the sponsors and also much more accessible, much more easily accessible for the spectators. So we're excited about the new plans and particularly about the greatly improved footing for all of the arenas.
And how about the cross-country course? What can we expect this year?
Well, here again, footing seems to be the topic of the year. The move of the sponsor tent and show jumping obviously impacted the routing of the cross-country course. So start and finish in the cool-out areas will all be now in the south field, which will give the riders a little more seclusion in their warm-up, take them sort of out of the fray of the spectators and give them a chance to get going on a good foot. The course is basically the same, except for the accommodations of the changes in the positions on the site. So the routing will be essentially the same once we get around the fact that we're starting them in the south field rather than the north field. But we've tried to pay attention to the footing. Obviously last year it was a brand new course. We have worked really hard to improve some areas that wash in the park so that that footing is much better for the horses. And it's going to take us a couple of years to really get the footing to the place that we want it to be, but we keep moving forward with it, with attention to it. So that's really been the focus on the cross country this year. We do have a big new ditch and wall complex that's really pretty. I would not want to jump it, but I think it could be exciting for the riders who do, and lots of new portables as well.
Well, we know that even though we're in Florida, the weather can be unkind to you up there in Red Hills and has been historically. So it looks like these moves really are going to enhance the experience for horse and rider as well as spectator.
The weather has been pretty fickle for for our entire history. And it, you know, it just is in this part of the country, in early March particularly. So hopefully the changes that we're making will keep people higher and drier, and as I say, the footing will be better for the horses all the way around. We, you know, we've entertained this idea for a number of years, but it's a pricey undertaking, and we just finally have the support to have been able to get it going. So we're, you know, we're thrilled that we're this far along with it. There'll be a lot of cleaning up is a little harsh, beautification that we need to do that we've just run out of time on here with the rain and the growing season not really starting. So it won't necessarily be as pretty to the eye as we'd like it to be, but that will start again the day after Red Hills, and we'll work on the beautification project once we get the, you know, the more important aspects of it in place.
Tell us about the divisions that you're running this year then, Jane, and the schedule.
Well, we are running three CIC divisions, the three-star, two-star, and one-star, and then three at the national level, advanced, intermediate, and prelim. We are going to run all dressage on Friday, all cross-country on Saturday, and all show jumping on Sunday. So we'll have a full day again on Sunday this year.
So really, obviously, jam-packed from the start, from Friday, March the 6th. Obviously, the competitors arrive earlier in the week, and we're just, 3 weeks away then for you. What's left to be done in those preparations?
We are still spreading Greenwich screenings, and we're also enhancing the padding of the barn tents. The bases had worn down over the years. We're finishing those up, and we're down to laser grading all of the arenas right now. So we're closing in on it, but we'll be in high gear until the horses begin to arrive.
Well, you always have a terrific family of sponsors and volunteers that make Red Hills possible, Jane. What other attractions as well are we going to be looking forward to this year, as well as all the parties? You do some wonderful parties there.
Well, the parties are in place, and we are... because of the number of rides that we'll have on Sunday, we're only doing one demonstration this year, and it's one that I'm really excited about. We have a fantastic therapeutic riding program in Thomasville, which is, of course, just right over the Georgia line from us. And they're going to join us on Sunday with a number of their students and do a demonstration between divisions for a moment, kind of highlighting their program and spotlighting the benefits of therapeutic riding. And I think that will be hopefully a benefit to them to bring more awareness to the program, but also be enlightening for the spectators and be fun for their students that get to come and participate. Sadly, once every 7 years, we land on the same weekend as the Live Oak Hounds Hunt Ball. And this is that year in the rotation, so they will not be with us this year. But we're excited about having Hands and Hearts for Horses as sort of our main feature on Sunday. We'll also have the City of Tallahassee's Playground for Children. They bring lots of blow-up bouncy houses and fun things, but Pig Hit seems to always be the sand pile with the scoops and buckets for the kids. So that'll be in place again, as well as pony rides for the little ones. So we'll have a jam-packed weekend. Lots of vendors back. Our Avenue of Shops is full, and we have our educational exhibits, some new ones this year, and then new food vendors. And hopefully the spectators will find that there is some healthier food here. Everybody loves Bradley's Country Sausage Dogs, but we're trying to balance a little bit with some vegetables and delicious, but maybe a little more healthful food right in the food court this year.
Something for everyone, of course, and Red Hills starts on Friday, March the 6th, as you heard there from Jane, with dressage all day, cross-country all day on Saturday, and then the final show jumping phase takes place on Sunday, March the 8th. And you can find more information on the website at rhht2015.org. That's the Red Hills website, all the information that you need to get to the venue and enjoy a fabulous competition up there in Tallahassee, Florida. Jane, the best of luck. I hope the sun shines on you that particular weekend and you have a great event. Thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you so much, Chris.
And you can, of course, find the full omnibus as well as all the latest news and developments at the USEA online at useventing.com. This podcast is available for download from the iTunes Store to your smartphone podcast app, so you can listen to the show on the go. Until the next time, thanks for your company and enjoy your eventing.